DW Spectrum with Connor Dillon and Gabriel Borrowed.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
And it was a huge leap for mankind. Hello and welcome to Spectrum, everyone. My name is Connor Dillon.
I'm Gabriel Borrowed.
That was Neil Armstrong there, and a clip that a lot of people have heard many times throughout their lives and will be hearing so much this week.
It's a big year.
Yeah, this is the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission, the mission that first placed human beings on the moon. Now, Neil Armstrong there, uttering those very famous words, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, we went outside this week as part of our preparation to show and asked a couple of people here in Bonn, Germany, if you had been there at that moment, stepping on the moon, what would you have said? This is Sarah.
Where can I get a coffee up here?
It's so gray.
That would have been your line.
That's what I would have said.
It's so gray. So nothing about coffee for you?
No.
Okay, well, we have now looked back in this episode at what happened on the moon there. And that is the extent to which we are going to look back, because I'm imagining, we talked about this, Gabe, a lot of you will be saturated with 50th anniversary retrospectives throughout the week. And we don't want to do that on this show. That is not the purpose of this episode of Spectrum. We are going to look ahead.
Yeah, what's going on right now with regard to moon research here in Germany?
Here in Europe. And where are we going in the coming years? And when I say coming years, it's not that many years till things are going to get really, really exciting. With more on that, our DW colleague, Charlie Shield.
A lot of robots are going to be rocketed to the moon in the next few years. And honestly, it's hard to keep track of them all. So here's a handy guide for some of the important ones. First, there's India's Chandrayaan 2 mission. If it lands successfully in September, India will become just the fourth country to have ever soft landed on the moon. Why is that important? Well, because if you want to put humans up there one day, you can't just smash them into the moon at thousands of kilometers per hour. Then, in late 2019, China launches its Chang'e 5 mission. That will also soft land on the moon, but then it's going to pick up some moon rocks and return back to Earth. That's pretty cool. Only the US and Russia have brought moon stuff back to the Earth up to this point, so it's kind of a big deal for China. The plan is to bring about 2 kilos, or 4.5 pounds, of moon stuff back to Earth. Japan will do the same thing in 2020, but it'll only bring about 100 grams back. But the big news in 2020 will be when a US-European spacecraft called Orion does a loop around the moon. It'll be empty, even though it can carry 4 people. This is the opening salvo in putting human beings back on the moon. But these are just what the space agencies are up to, because there are a whole lot of private companies and even hobbyists who have their own plans as well.
Whole lot of companies, whole lot of hobbyists, whole lot of people out there who would love to send stuff to the moon. And previously, you were dependent on space agencies to do so. This is the new space race. This is the new era of space exploration, where you have companies like SpaceX or Blue Origin, other companies developing their rockets that could potentially take more stuff to the moon in the future, mm-hmm. and doing it outside of space agencies' control.
Still inconceivable to me, but that's our world.
And a couple of people are already preparing for it right here in Germany.
Right over in Berlin.
In Berlin.
Meet some of those hobbyists.
Former East Berlin, yeah. This is our colleague Lea Albrecht.
Allee der Kosmonauten, Cosmonauts Alley. Funnily enough, because in this hall, a bunch of young technicians and engineers are getting ready for their very own moon mission. They call themselves PT scientists, short for part-time scientists, and they're developing a lander and a rover that are set to go to the moon.
On your site, you write it's a technology demonstration mission.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really to show off?
That's Carsten Becker, Deputy Chief Technology Officer at PT Scientists.
No, it's really to show that what we're doing is capable of delivering hardware to the surface and demonstrating some of the new technologies that we're using on Earth right now that it can be used for exploration as well.
Carsten and his team want to send two rovers to the moon. They weigh 30 kilograms each, or about 65 pounds, and they're made of 3D printed aluminum. For a moon rover, that's light. As a result, they won't be able to carry much stuff, 5 kilograms or 11 pounds, so not much space for lunar science. But it is a photogenic vehicle.
And it looks quite cute because it kind of looks like it has a face.
This is Ellen Hill, a systems engineer at Part-Time Scientists. She's kneeling next to the last generation rover, looking it into its camera eyes. It looks a bit like a robot dog. It's knee-high, has a tiltable solar panel on its back, four wheels, and a head with three black-eyed cameras to see the moon in HD.
So the two cameras here, they're about the distance of human eyes apart. So when they both take these images, you can kind of merge them together somehow or use them together to create a more 3D looking kind of image.
And the middle one is a telelens that has filter wheels in front of it. So we can take a look at different wavelengths and get some basic understanding of the material composition.
Okay, so they will carry some instruments on the rovers. One to measure the moon's gravity field and another that will try to melt the moon's dust and rocks with a laser to then study its properties.
This is one of the ideas that people have for creating a moon village, is you could make maybe a landing pad or something by melting the rock underneath and have a really smooth surface where you can have roads and places for spacecraft to land more easily, that kind of thing.
Their destination on the moon is the landing site of the Apollo 17 mission, the last crewed moon mission of 1972.
Okay, Houston, the Challenger has landed.
Their first job was to unload equipment, including their rover, the electric car in which they would drive to the exploration sites.
We want to go back to Apollo 17 to take a look at the hardware that has been left on the surface for more than 40 years now, and we want to take pictures and figure out what happened to it. Because if you think about it, there is no atmosphere or anything, so it could standing there like brand new, so to speak, but it could also be bombarded to shreds by micrometeoroids or radiation or thermal or whatever. And so going back there is important to figure out what materials can be used to build a sustainable base on the moon. So one of the most important questions for an engineer is, can we use duct tape to fix things on the moon?
The previous day, they had broken a rear fender of the rover.
Oh, okay.
On the moon, the astronauts put it together. The fender section formed from a lunar map, molded with tape.
Man, it didn't feel like this stuff was that hard.
The images that everybody remembers are the kind of fuzzy ones of the Apollo missions, but if we have really clear HD images, then I think it'll hopefully get everybody back interested and kind of thinking it's a reality that we can do this again.
But wait, how will the rover get to the moon? The plan is to piggyback it on Alina. Alina is what the startup is calling their moon lander, their second creation. The lander stands two heads taller than Ellen, and it looks like a four-legged crab.
So basically the job of it is to fly from Earth orbit to the moon and land on the moon. And the most difficult part is the landing part, because you have to make sure that it's done really, really accurately.
Alina has some spare payload, about 200 kilograms. And the team is selling that payload to basically anyone who wants it for 700 to 800 euros per kilogram. Their motto is space belongs to everyone. So kind of privatizing the access to the moon, turn it into a commercial thing to make it more accessible. Does that work?
Yeah, it does, because if you look at, for example, the ISS, which is a very neat example where it's the International Space Station, and you would think that everyone would be allowed to go there. But the fact is, the Chinese aren't. And this is because this is a political endeavor. And we don't care as much about where our customers are coming from, but we can help them to achieve the goals that they have.
Somehow the hobbyists who started out working in their spare time on Wednesday evenings would be proving their motto well if the mission is successful.
This is really a bit childish, but I'm really a big fan of remote-controlled cars. And I thought, this is really cool because you're not just building a remote-controlled car, but you're building it and it has to work on the first try. And also driving around on the moon, how cool is that?
Originally, the PT scientists wanted to start their mission this very iconic year, 50 years after the first crewed moon landing. But they didn't quite get it ready in time. Now they're planning their mission to the moon for 2021.
I was strolling on the moon one day.
Lea Albrecht, DW, Berlin, Germany.
I love that these astronauts are just hopping around up on the moon, part of the Apollo 17 mission, and just singing and dancing and correcting each other while they sing a song. So again, a lot of robots. Expect a lot of robots to be flown to the moon. Rovers, contraptions with arms, contraptions with drills that are drilling down into lunar surface and collecting materials up there.
What about people? 2024, right?
Yep. The people are coming, and we're about to, or I should say the people are going back to the moon. And before we get into that, we thought we would check in again with some Germans just on the street, walk around, hear what they had to say, how they actually feel about the idea of human beings returning to the moon.
I think they should go to the moon. I mean, if it's possible and you can find out something new, why not go to the moon or even go further in the universe? Yes. Being an engineer, I think it's cool.
So that was Florian, 26-year-old German engineer.
And he's excited. He wants us to go back.
Yeah.
We got a very different view from Sarah. We heard her earlier in the show, and here she is saying why she doesn't actually like the idea of sending people back to the moon right now.
Yeah, at this moment in time, I think there's probably other things that the money could go towards. Yeah, especially still in the scientific realm, but not not having to do with moon travel. Yeah, probably adaptation to climate change.
I found that really interesting that was her top priority.
Yeah, 20-year-old woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A younger generation looking at a very different world than the generation that preceded it.
How about that guy Reinhardt who had just left the office? He was running to the train station, I believe.
Rolling his suitcase along.
Definitely would be down for going to the moon, and this is why.
I'm a little bit of a sci-fi fan, yeah. So I would say maybe in 100 or 200 years we can move to other planets, colonize them, maybe find a way to use also resources from that without harming our nature and our planet. For example, imagine you can colonize Mars and take the resources out of it. Nobody cares, maybe. There's no, I would say, nature where you harm life like on Earth.
So in general, a lot of excitement, a lot of people wanting to go back to the moon. But how are we going to do it? How are we going to get there in the first place? And almost as important, when?
The U.S. space agency NASA is still the only agency in the world that has ever put human beings on the moon. And it aims to do that again in 2024. This is the Artemis mission. If all goes according to plan, batches of four astronauts will blast off from Earth on a brand new rocket and in a shiny new spacecraft called Orion. Once they're in space, their next destination will be to a brand new space station that will orbit the moon. This space station is called Gateway. Once the astronauts dock there, a lunar lander will take them down to the moon. After they're done bouncing around the lunar surface, the current plans are for that same vehicle to take them back up to the Gateway station. From there, they fly back home. Then, they'll do it again in 2025. And again in 2026. A few years later, China hopes to put people on the moon as well. Then, in the 2030s, Russia will follow suit too. Then Japan. After that, expect other countries to join in too. All the while, various rockets will be dropping things on the moon that will be used to develop a moon base and, ultimately, a moon village, as the European Space Agency calls it. From that point on, we can expect human beings to have permanent settlements on the moon. Or, to put it another way, the next time you see the moon, enjoy the view. The 2020s will be the last decade where you can look up and say, there's nobody on the moon right now.
So enjoy the view while it lasts, the empty moon up there. Now, conspicuously absent from that wonderful list there was the mention of any German astronauts. And that's not because no German astronauts are planning to go to the moon. It's just because the plans aren't totally clear. We're still figuring everything out, I guess.
Either nobody knows or nobody said anything. That's pretty much where it's at. But I did talk to Germany's moon man, Matthias Maurer, at the European Astronaut Center right across the Rhine River.
And this is where all of Europe's astronauts are trained,
across the
Rhine.
We were chatting about the moon. You're going to be on the moon someday. Is that right? Did I hear that correctly?
There is a chance that we return to the moon in the 20s, but it all depends on the political will. I mean, if our decision makers say, this is a priority goal, let's go there, then we can. Then they need to give us funds and we can develop technology. It is feasible, absolutely, and I'm looking very much forward to being able to walk on the moon, but we need a political will to actually bring us there.
Yeah, you said you were the happy guy. What do you think that would feel like to set foot on the moon?
I think physically it feels like more or less the same, like stepping outside of your house and walking on the beach without having an ocean there. But then, I mean, it's a massive step for humanity to return to the moon, because we've been there 50 years ago. And so far, I mean, this huge gap of 50 years, why haven't we returned? So it needs to be a political will, and everyone in the world understands the moon is there. We fly to the moon. There's no doubt. People know what it means. When I say now I fly to space, I fly to the International Space Station. It's been up in space for almost 20 years, and people still ask me, oh, where does it fly to?
One thing with regard to the science, how important do you think it is to get back to the moon?
It's massively important to do the science that actually was planned for Apollo 18, 19 and 20. These were the science missions that were upcoming. And the moon has a lot to offer. We can do science on the moon. So we need to understand how the moon actually formed. And if we understand that, we can understand how our solar system evolved. And understanding how our own solar system evolved, we understand, or we can model, where in the universe another solar system similar to Earth can have been created. So it's like, in summary, understanding the moon history means understanding the moon Earth history, understanding our solar system, understanding where in the universe could be a second world.
So where in the universe could be a second world is what Matthias Maurer
the moon
said
man.
There.
Germany's moon man.
Astronaut Center.
He also mentioned political will, and he meant there should be more of it. And one thing I'd like to add just very briefly here is that I personally believe, it is my opinion, that there can also be too much political will. If you're interested in it, online, there's an opinion piece written by me about how I think that the U.S.'s five-year moon plan is dangerous. It is an accelerated plan. The original date was 2028 to get people on the moon, to get Americans on the moon. It is now 2024, and I personally feel that it has happened for the wrong reasons and not the right reasons. Again, the title of that piece online, dw.com, The U.S.'s Five-Year Moon Plan is Dangerous.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. Let me know what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, darling, kiss me.
Hey, Connor?
Hmm?
I got a question.
Okay.
If you had the chance, would you go to the moon?
Prior to having children, I would have said yes. But now that I have children, I couldn't do it. I couldn't put myself at risk, even if the risk was minimal, even if statistics showed it was, 0.01% chance. There's something about I couldn't do it. You?
I think I'd go. Okay. My kids don't mean anything to me. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, they'd be proud of you.
The exhilaration would be too much. Too much not to take that opportunity to seize it.
Well, let's check in with a couple Germans we talked to on the street and see how Germans feel about the idea of flying to the moon as tourists. Would they pay for it, or would they have to be paid?
And how much would they pay?
Someone would have to pay me $1 gazillion to go to the moon.
I think 50,000. I don't have that, but if I had it, I would pay that. Yeah.
Definitely would have to be paid to do that. I think probably, I don't know, like $100,000.
Okay, I go with you to the moon for $99.90.
So just under 100
euros. 100 bucks, sure. Then I go to the moon.
Okay, so I'll see you on the moon in the year 2150.
See you there. Shall I bring some beers?
Please, moon beer.
Okay, so for the participants, the willing participants, there's going to have to be some preparation involved in going to the moon. When I was over at the European Astronaut Center, when I talked to Maurer, I talked to two other guys, Tobias and a guy named Dave. Tobias is an exercise physiologist. Dave is an aerospace physiologist. About just how to prepare normal people for these missions to the moon.
There is some evidence to suggest that individuals who are extremely fit, they may have a greater loss, particularly in those early days. So actually, in terms of physical fitness, we may not need to do that much before the mission. We need to carefully consider what happens during the mission.
Okay, so you don't want to build me up with a lot of muscle in my legs and everything and then send me up there?
No, this wouldn't make sense. So the average astronaut is not a super athlete, so that's not what we're looking for. It's more like an average fitness that is required, but we wouldn't make you a super athlete before. This would not be a requirement.
At the moment, we don't have a good simulation of what it's going to be like to be on the moon here on Earth. We have simulations of being in microgravity. So, for instance, there's a study going on right now looking at the effects of microgravity on the body by having people lying in a bed with the head below the level of the heart and lying in bed for 60 days. And that's a reasonably good model of some of the effects we experience in microgravity, but we don't have the equivalent for life on the moon.
How would you possibly create that lunar gravity here on Earth? How...
Yeah, there are different models that we can use. So in the previous study, we've used a so-called verticalized treadmill. So you would virtually run on the wall. You were suspended, kind of free-floating in midair.
Awesome.
And then there would be a force pulling you towards the treadmill. And this force can be adjusted from, let's say, lunar gravity to Martian gravity and up to 1G. We have parabolic flights. This is another way how we can create lunar gravity. This affects the whole body, so this is kind of real lunar gravity. But the downside here is that the time is very limited, so we can maximally study the effects of lunar gravity for 40 seconds during a parabolic flight. Yeah.
Have you ever tried any of these systems out?
Yeah, sure.
What does it feel like to come close to being in lunar gravity?
It's fun. It feels light. It feels actually great to walk in lunar gravity. I've only tried the verticalized treadmill because I'm a super anxious person and I wouldn't dare to go on the parabolic flight. And I get seasick immediately when I'm on a boat, so I'm not the right person to go on a parabolic flight. So I like to stay on the ground. But Dave, he's been on a parabolic flight and he can definitely tell you more about this experience.
What is that like?
So the normal parabolic flight, or vomit comet, as some people call it, means that you have a period of weightlessness of about 23 seconds. So there you can float around, and then when you drop out of the parabola, you experience a period of hypergravity and you get slammed to the floor. But last year, for the first time, the European Space Agency funded a flight where there were various G levels. So there was 25, 50, and 75% of Earth G. And so those parabolas, because of the partial G, were slightly longer than the microgravity one. So as Toby said, there's around 30 to 40 seconds of less gravity. Now, it's like being freed from some of chains. So suddenly movements that you wouldn't consider, because gravity is obviously pulling you down, you're free to do. And you feel as though you're working in a more three-dimensional space. when you're working in 1G, your feet are on the floor, and that determines where you can reach. How far can your arms move? Whereas when you're in partial gravity or microgravity, if you propel yourself, you can go anywhere, like Superman or a superhero, and suddenly the world feels like a bigger place. And that's something that crew members speak about when they're on the International Space Station, in that, yes, they're in a confined environment. They're in the International Space Station, but everywhere within it, you can just go to whenever you feel like it.
One thing that didn't pop up there was a discussion about the differences between male physiology and female physiology. It makes me wonder in the future if we'll get a lot more, hopefully, a lot more research on how women are affected differently by low gravity or zero gravity. Mm-hmm. And by the way, one last thing I wanted to play for our listeners. This was Sarah again, one of the people we talked to about going to the moon. And I asked her, you know, NASA is planning to send a woman to the moon in 2024. I asked her, is that important to you?
I think that would be an important step, especially because I know to go to the moon, you have to have a lot of scientific training. So I think that would show that there's been progress made in that area, especially.
DW. Made for minds.
Gabe? Are we reverberating right now?
It's Ernie time.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm doing it.
Well, I'd like to visit the moon on a rocket ship high in the air. Yes, I'd like to visit the moon, but I don't think I'd like to live there. Though I'd like to look down at the earth from above, I would miss all the places and the people I love. So although I might go, I'll be coming home.
Oh yeah, for one afternoon.
I don't want to live on the moon.
Sorry about that, Connor.
I'd like to travel under the sea. I could meet all the fish everywhere. Yes, I'd travel under the sea. I don't think I'd like to live there. Though I'd stay for a day there if I had my wish. There's not much to do when your friends are all fish. And an oyster and clam, they aren't real family. So I don't want to live in the sea. I'd like to visit the jungle, hear the lions roar. Go back in time and meet a dinosaur. There's so many strange places I'd like to be, but none of them permanently. So if I should visit the moon, well, I'll dance on a moonbeam, and then I would make a wish on a star, and I'd wish I was home once again. Though I'd like to look down at the earth from above, I would miss all the places and the people I love. So although I might go, I'll be coming home soon. Cause I don't wanna live on the moon. No, I don't wanna live on the moon.
Long live Jim Henson.
Yeah, well, hey, I want to say thanks to everyone for joining us as we look forward to the future of the moon at the 50th anniversary of humankind's first step on the moon. 50 years ago, 1969, a long time ago, and now suddenly right ahead of us, we have the big next steps. Hey, if any of you out there have any other questions, insights, comments, opinions, please send them to us, spectrum@dw.com. I would especially like to know if any of you agree or, more importantly, disagree on the accelerated NASA timeframe for the moon. If I've missed anything or if you have insights that I don't, please let me know. Now, to all of you, we would like to wish a wonderful week ahead, full of lots of moon celebrations and retrospectives, and hopefully even a glimpse of the moon itself.
Thanks for listening, guys.
DW. made for minds.